From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, October 17th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chi, Shawa, Toeksuk Nusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, we talk with author Janae Simone about her book, Teaching in the Dark, stories from her first year of teaching in Shishmaref. She'll be in Juneau on October 26th. We talk with Hollis from Bustin' Out Boutique about the annual bra drive happening this Saturday, October 19th. The Alaska Travel Industry Association is holding their annual meeting in Juneau next week. We'll have a preview. And we talk with Ashley Morehouse from the university's Technical Education Center about a new program in collaboration with the high school. Those conversations and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. First, though, a quick look at the Juno World Affairs Council Fall Forum, which starts tomorrow. The Juno World Affairs Council has organized a forum on the rise of political authoritarianism in the 21st century. It's being held in KTOO's TV studio downstairs here at 360 Egan Drive. The forum will be taped before a live audience. It will run from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday, October 18th, and then again from 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, October 19th. You can find the full program at jwac.org. The forum will explore why democracy cannot be assumed to be secure, even in democratic societies. The five individuals speaking at the forum on Friday and Saturday have studied authoritarian and undemocratic developments in some of the previously democratic societies that emerged in the last half of the 20th century. Again, the full schedule is available at jwac.org. It's the JWAC Fall Forum happening tomorrow and Saturday. And now, Janae Simone is a teacher and a teacher educator who has over three decades of experience. Her new book, Teaching in the Dark, is about her first years of teaching in Alaska. She's on her way to Alaska for a return and to talk about her book. She will be at the Mendenhall Library on Saturday, October 26th from 2 to 3 p.m. I was able to speak with Janae from her office in Seattle before she begins heading up to Alaska this weekend. First, before we talk about the book and the book tour, I just want to talk. You've been a teacher for decades, and you're also a consultant, and you've done all kinds of work, and so I'm just curious about like where that love of teaching came from when in you. Like, did it start as a child? When did it hit you?
It hit me in fifth grade. I remember the. I had a teacher, her name was Mrs. Subkoviak, and I do touch on her, I think, briefly in the book, but she was, I think, a little annoyed that I was constantly finishing my work quickly, so she needed to find other things for me to do. So she suggested that I do some research on something I was interested in, and before I knew it, that freedom to learn something on my own, and then to be invited to present that information to the class, she cleared a spot on the wall for me to do that. My topic was the great white shark, of course. I was so enthralled. And she just walked me through the whole thing. You know, she showed me how to make copies on the old mimeograph machine, and I learned all this stuff. And then it occurred to me to ask if I could give my classmates a quiz. And she thought that was, I'm sure, quite funny and entertaining. My classmates were not amused, but I did it. And there was such freedom and excitement in that for me. And so whenever occasion asked for it, when I was again kind of finished early with my work, I had her for both fifth and sixth grades. This is back in Wisconsin. I was allowed to do research of my own. And I'm a very inquisitive person. I love learning about anything, anywhere, just constantly curious about why things are the way they are and how they work. And so I ended up really getting interested actually in the civil rights movement. And particularly trying to learn about women or children in history, because they were so absent from my textbooks at the time, back in the 70s. And that just kind of carried me forward into future degrees, always interested in the people who are sort of the unsung heroes and the ones that we want to bring to light. So yeah, she really kicked that one off.
So Teaching in the Dark covers your first year of teaching in Alaska. So let's talk about, like, how did you get this position? Did it happen right after you graduated with your teaching degree? How did you decide to come to Alaska, and where did you end up going?
Yeah, I was graduated in 1984 from Western Washington University in Bellingham, Washington, and my degree was in secondary English. There were no teaching jobs really available anywhere. They were very hard to get here, and I kind of flunked my student teaching, and I had to come back a second time. And I did that in Linwood, Washington, just north of where I am right now. I was checking the classified ads every day, and the first one that came up was this ad that said teachers wanted for Alaska. And so I called the number and I got asked to come to interview, and then I got asked to come again. And then they were basically just hiring people for any of the villages. This was Bering Strait School District. And all we had was a map pinned to the wall in the hotel where all these interviews were being taking place. And when they interviewed me, they thought they would send me to Shishmaref. So that's how I ended up there.
What did that experience teaching in Shishmaref teach you as a teacher?
The same theme keeps coming through. And now, still as a high school teacher, every day I think about the power of that experience in Shishmaref. And it was all about the relationships with the students. It sounds so normal, but it really is that. And letting go of all of my preconceived notions of where a student should be, you know, academically or emotionally, and just really meeting them day after day where they're at. There is no other way really to teach. Otherwise, you're just throwing words into the wind. And I realize that every day when I make a mistake with that. So with Shishmaref, what was so powerful about it, and I didn't get this until I started really writing the book, was because there were so few distractions at the time. You know, there was no coffee shop there for me to go or a theater. There was only one channel on the television. There was no, you know, except for flying to Nome, I suppose, there was nowhere to go. You're on the island all the time. So I was constantly immersed in teaching, trying to figure out what to do. And then all of that was punctuated by these bouts of loneliness and very long walks. I walked a lot on that island as a means to sort of process what was going on. And I think there was just this juxtaposition of being in that very powerful landscape, you know, right along the north-facing side there of the Chukchi Sea, and the wind and the animals, and seeing my students in their natural environment in so many different ways outside of the school setting was very instructional for me. So I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from that experience that still informs what I do now. And then the second part of it was, again, because of lack of distraction, I remember being asked during the interview how I handled boredom. And I don't get bored too easily. You know, I'm pretty good at entertaining myself. But there were times up there where I was just going a little stir crazy because I couldn't figure out what to do that was new. But on the other hand, the introspection that being there allowed me to practice, introspection and reflection on my teaching, and also reflection on who I was as I was bumping up against all these things that were so new to me, I think really helped me grow that muscle of self-awareness that has continued to help me now with sort of situational awareness as a teacher. I recognize constantly what's going on inside of me that triggers me, that makes me want to act a certain way toward a kid. And I can catch myself, you know, if I get triggered with frustration or if I get pulled too far along in something that they want to do. And I realize they're just trying to sort of manipulate the situation because that's what they're doing now. And it's all practice in adulthood. So I think there's that self-awareness and then awareness of the students and where they're at that was just really, really palpable there in a way that is not, if I had been teaching in a school and in a place that was much more comfortable that I knew all about, I would have kind of just, for me, been quickly either dismissive or just sort of shellacked over things. I wouldn't have noticed it as much. Whereas there, it was just like in your face all the time.
So this book, Teaching in the Dark, it covers that first year of teaching there in Shishmaref. What inspired you to write the book, and when did you decide to do that?
Yeah, after being in Shishmaref, I had a lot of journals, and I had a lot of artifacts from the time, you know, the newspaper we published and the yearbook. I had friends to whom I had written letters from Shishmaref, and they gave them back to me. They said, so I had three or four friends, and one in particular who shows up in the book, I call her Mia. She gave me back this whole stack of letters, and she said, you need to write a book. And this was years, decades ago. And so I tried, but I just didn't understand what I was really writing about, like who would care? So it wasn't until the year 2019, quite a few years after the fact, that I started teaching high school again. I always wanted to come back to teaching high school. I had been a teacher educator working at various universities for a very long time, but I always wanted to come back and work with this age group. There's just something about this age group that just humors me, and I just love them to pieces. So I thought, I'm going to give it a try. And I have to say that after 27 years of teaching other people how to be teachers, I felt like a first year teacher all over again. So the stories from that time, the emotional part of being that teacher came rushing back. And then I started being able to make sense of, again, of the power of that time. To make sense of Shishmaref, I wrote the book. I just felt compelled. And then it also really helped me sort out stuff I was experiencing as a teacher now in the 21st century.
That makes the best stories, I think, when you are compelled to tell it, right? Like that, there's just something about it that must come out and it must be told. So let's talk about this tour that you're doing. You're coming to Alaska. You're returning to the scene. Tell us a little bit about the journey, and you're going to be in Juneau. Tell us a little bit about that. But first, tell us about where you're going to start and where you're going.
Yeah, I'm going to be flying up to Nome first through Anchorage. I'm bringing my brother with me. I have a brother who is an award-winning photographer. I am so excited to have him with me. He's going to help document the journey, and we travel well together, so we'll have a really great time. So we're going to be in Nome on Saturday and Sunday and doing a talk at the Carrie M. McLean Museum. And so that was actually a place in my book where I visited for the first time all those years ago. So it'll be really neat to go back. And then we're going to fly to Shishmaref, and I'll be talking to the teachers there and students, and of course, meeting up, I think, with some former students in the community. So it's going to be kind of relaxed, not too scripted, you know, just kind of go with the flow. But that should be really good. And I'm excited to feel that place again. And yeah, after Shishmaref, then Todd and I will fly to Juneau, and we'll be there for 3 or 4 days. And I'm going to be doing a talk, a book talk, and book sale and signing hosted by Hearthside Books. And we're going to be at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. And it's going to be on Saturday, October 26th from 2 to 3 p.m. And yeah, I'll have a slideshow and I'm sure some new images and things from Shishmaref, since we will have just been there.
That's so cool. Well, we look forward to seeing you October 26th at 2 p.m. at the Mendenhall Library. That's so cool. And I just have a last question for you, because this book probably will inspire folks, but also, you know, is there any takeaways that you have for teachers, new teachers especially, who might be going into an environment that they're not used to, and or somewhere different that they haven't been before? Is there anything that you might want to advise them on or give them some peace of mind about?
Yeah, I think it's really critical, first for the people who are doing the hiring, that, and I don't know what it's like these days, but for them to have some kind of chaperone or some serious mentoring on the other end, so that when, as a new teacher, you're landing in this new culture and environment, you've got somebody there who can really pay attention to you and check in with you regularly. Because there's so many questions that come up, way more than I think even teaching in a school that you might be used to, let's say in the lower 48, if that's your experience. And then going into that new environment too, to keep your eyes wide open, really, and just appreciate and be grateful for any perspective that you bring that starts to, I don't want to say judge, but we do that as humans. We judge, we calculate, we try to compartmentalize what it is we're seeing and tuck it away and compare it to what we know. And I think going into these villages, it's really an exercise in constant kind of like situational awareness and allowing everything as it is to be as it is. And I think it's a lot more inner work than there is outer work, because I know that I've read this and I was like this too, that I was going to the village to try to help, to try to teach, to try to me do my thing. And really, to the degree that I kept pushing that agenda, whether it was conscious or not, it backfired on me. And then it became more frustrating because those two things weren't necessarily meshing. I needed to do a whole lot more exploring. I needed to ask a whole lot more questions. I needed to ask for help a lot more, because the new teachers tend to think they are supposed to know what to do. And they're afraid to ask questions because then maybe you'll look incompetent. You know, like, oh, you should know that. And everybody's in such a hurry everywhere, you know. So what was kind of nice about being out there was things slowed down.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like going into it with an open heart, an open mind, and really sort of looking. Yeah, I love the way you said that. Instead of pushing your agenda, sort of seeing what's available to be a part of and sort of really embrace community. And that's really cool.
Yeah, embrace community. There's a richness there that is really hard, I think, to get at if as an outsider for a while. You know, there's a trust issue that we see everywhere, but particularly outsiders coming into a village, these other communities. And with, you know, I'm guessing a fairly high turnover rate, again, you know, teachers coming and going or principals, then it's all the more reason for teachers to learn as much as they can about that community and really gather those resources as much as the, you know, people are willing to offer them to you. And I think most do. Shishmaref was incredibly gracious and welcoming.
Janae Simone, thank you so much for taking a few minutes. Enjoy your tour. We'll see you in Juneau on Saturday, October 26th at 2 p.m. at the Mendenhall Library. The book is called Teaching in the Dark, and you can find out more at JaneeSimone.com. That's JaneeSimone.com. Really appreciate you being here today. Gunath Cheesh.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Bustin' Out Boutique is a full-service bra fitting store that specializes in finding you the best solution for your needs. And this Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., they are doing a bra drive again. What exactly is a bra drive? Well, I've got the expert right here. Hollis Kitchen joins me now to tell us all about it. Gunath Cheesh, Ha'igudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you join us, Hollis. Wasa'iati, how's it going?
Hi, thanks for so much for having me. It's going good, yeah.
Okay, and I know we want to let the people know that the store is at 118 Seward Street. It's right there downtown. And bustinoutboutique.com is the place. We are going to talk about this other website, thebrarecyclers.com. But tell us first, what exactly is a bra drive?
Well, so a bra drive is basically just a general event where we kind of have a big push to help push people to kind of clear out their top drawers, basically get those old bras out of their wardrobe closet and help us collect we collect them all. So that allows us to then send them off to the Bra Recyclers, which is a really great nonprofit organization. They work with like survivors of human trafficking, people that are victims of domestic violence, folks of lower income, to help relocate and get these bras to the people that need them. And then any of the bras that are not wearable, they will also send off to be recycled to various places that do like clothing recycling as well. So that way the fibers and the materials can be reused in other ways, which is really great.
It sounds great. Like that website, thebrarecyclers.com is the website. You can learn more about it there. They can take your donation. I think you can. They can also take it directly if you can't make it down this Saturday to Bustin' Out Boutique. But you know, they have a whole great thing on their website about what happens and supporting families in need, and also helping out the environment. And it's really great. I'm curious, Hollis, like, how does someone know when their bra needs to be recycled?
There's a lot of reasons and signs. For some people, if their bra is bugging them, so like if it's causing them pain or if it isn't fitting them properly, that can be a time to recycle it, find a new home for it, things like that. If it's someone that's been in and done a fitting with us before, if they notice things aren't just feeling quite as good as they used to, most bras are, they're a support garment and they're only designed to last a specific amount of time, depending on how many you have. So for some people that may be close to a year, every 2 years and things like that. And so this just gives people an opportunity to find a good spot to get rid of those bras that are no longer functional for them, without necessarily having it go straight to a landfill, because there's a lot of fabric waste in all of the clothing industry. But yeah, and bras are a tricky garment because there's a lot of secondhand places that don't accept them. It's considered underwear, and so there's kind of this gray area on what's allowed. And also, it's just kind of hard to like match up the right size to the right person when it's a secondhand situation versus like people that come in and do a fitting with us. We have all the sizes, but might not get all the same sizes donated.
I see. Yeah. Like I think that's why it's great to have this event, because I feel like undergarments, you feel like, yeah, I can't donate that to the local, you know, clothing store. Who wants to wear somebody's old, you know, undergarments? That doesn't seem right. But, so I figure that most people may just think about throwing them away. And again, like you said, sort of taking up space in the landfill. But it's nice that there is a place like the Bra Recyclers who will be able to do that. And that's kind of cool. So how does it work on Saturday? Do people just stop by? Are you just going to have a bin? Or are you just going to put something out where people can drop off stuff? And it's just bras, right? It's no other undergarments.
Bras are accepted. And if you have any other types of undergarments that are new with tags, those are also accepted by them, but definitely no used like underpants, things like that, but gently used bras and clean are accepted. But yeah, we'll kind of grab them from people. We'll have a bin out front, or not out front, but like in the front of the store as well for people to just toss things into. One of the things I'm really excited about with the Bra Recyclers is they have a little bit more of a broad range of worn and various like some previous groups that we've worked with before, everything had to be very gently used, things like that. But because the Bra Recyclers has the ability to actually like break down the actual garment and get the raw materials, they can accept slightly more worn items, but still clean. Clean is preferred.
Please wash your undergarments before you give them to the Bustin' Out Boutique and or the Bra Recyclers. That's always advised for sure. So I have a question for you related to the Bustin' Out Boutique itself. How many folks do you think you have assisted in terms of, because you have a great service. It's not just a store like you go into Fred Meyer's or, you know, somewhere else where you could purchase a bra, or online where you might be able to do something virtually. But one of your specialties is helping folks find the right size. And I'm curious, like, are you keeping a metric of how many people you've saved over the years in terms of understanding their true size?
Not officially. I mean, we definitely, you know, if someone has shopped with us, we do offer to have a profile for them in the system. So that way, the next time they come in, we have a good starting point. But definitely at least a few thousand people, I would assume.
Locals
and off the ships and everything. And yeah, just all over. Yeah.
And what was the inciting action that brought Bustin' Out Boutique into existence? How did you come up with the idea?
Well, growing up, and as a lot of women experience, I really struggled with finding correctly fitting undergarments and things like that. And once I really figured out, oh, hey, this is how bras should really fit and feel, and kind of finally felt like I understood what was going on, I was like, I can't be the only person that's struggling with this. And so myself and Lindsay, my business partner, we kind of put our heads together and like made this happen. So yeah.
I see. That's
so that
awesome.
Was definitely a catalyst point.
Yeah. And what year did the Busting Out Boutique start?
2014. So yeah, we're coming up on 10 years here in December, which is really exciting.
Wow. Happy 10th, early 10th anniversary. Yeah. That's kind of cool. And in terms of like, for those who may not, you know, maybe new to Juno or haven't experienced shopping at the Bustin' Out Boutique before, what else do you offer in terms of clothing? Are there other things? And I know you offer a little bit of a men's section. I've been in there myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have some men's underwear and undershirts. We also have like nursing bras and a little bit of maternity and nursing clothing. We also have like some loungewear items. So like sweatpants, cozy items, things like that. A little bit of clothing, pajama sets, robes, that kind of stuff. Some self-care items, like skincare things as well. And then we also have a little mini like baby section, for like new moms and new parents out in the community, because we know it's hard to find certain things, and especially with like Fred Meyer doing the remodel right now, we have a few items that are harder to find in town normally, and especially right now with the remodel happening over there. So yeah.
I see. Okay. And in the sense of the sort of the sizing fitting that you do there, what is it that you find is the biggest issue that folks have? Like, if you have any advice for folks who are out there looking to maybe purchase online or can't get down to the store or things like that, what is the thing that you find in the fittings that is the most common myth or misnomer, or trying to ask that in the right way, you know?
No, I know what you mean. Yeah. I feel like one of the biggest complaints that we get from people is they find underwires uncomfortable in their bras. And 90% of the time, it's because they're just not wearing the right size. Like if a bra is fitting properly, you'll notice it a little bit because it's a support garment, but it shouldn't, if it has a wire or wire free or anything, it shouldn't be like causing a lot of irritation. It should not be painful. It should not be all of the things people associate with bras usually. And so for most people, they're usually wearing cup sizes that are too small and band sizes that are much too large for them, or some combination of that. Yeah.
I see. Well, it's great. It's a wonderful service that you offer there at the Bustin' Out Boutique, and the other service that you're offering this weekend, the bra drive. It's where you can recycle your undergarments, your bras. Please clean them, of course, before you bring them over to Bustin' Out Boutique. And if you haven't had a fitting with them, you can find out a little bit more about that on Saturday as well. It's this Saturday, October 19th, from 10 to 6 p.m. It's downtown, 118 Seward Street, bustinoutboutique.com. And or if you want to find out about where these materials will be going, it's a great service called the brarecyclers.com. They can either forward on the actual garments to people who need them, who may not be able to afford them, who are in situations that they don't have access to that kind of thing. And or if the bra is beyond saving, I guess, they will recycle those materials and break it down so that it doesn't end up in the landfill and it'll find a reuse. So that's really great. Again, it's the Bustin' Out Boutique, Saturday, October 19th, 10 to 6 p.m. Hollis Gwyneth-Cheese, for being here and telling us a little bit about it, and have a wonderful drive on site. Is this an annual thing now? Is this the second time you've done it?
Well, technically, I'm trying to remember. I want to say it's technically the fifth or sixth time, maybe seventh time we did it. We had to stop a little bit during COVID just because the previous organization we were working with was no longer accepting items. And so it took a little time to find one that was going to be accepting again. So yeah.
I love that. That's so cool. Well, thanks again, Hollis. I really appreciate you hopping on and telling us a little bit about the Broad Drive this Saturday. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Next, we'll chat with Alaska Travel Industry Association about their annual meeting next week here in Juneau. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clenady have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Alaska Travel Industry Association annual meeting is in Juneau this year. The theme is Immersive Alaska. It all starts up Tuesday of next week. You can find out more at alaskatia.org. I am joined now by Jillian Simpson, who is the president and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association, and Liz Perry, who is president and CEO of Travel Juneau. Gunath Chish Ha Yigudi, thank you so much. Actually, I want to say that again. It's Gunath Chish Ha Ye Adi for plural. And thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasa'iti, how's it going? You must be in the final stages of preparation.
We sure are. Yeah, it's really exciting to be here. Thank you for inviting us on today. And we could not be more stoked than to be coming to Juneau in a few days to get ready for convention and have our convention in Alaska's capital city.
I love that. One of my first years at KTOO, I actually went out to, it was in Sitka, and I'd never been to Sitka before. So I was like, I kind of combined it. I was like, I can go on a travel and I can go to the convention, because I was learning about things at KTOO and the travel industry and all that. And I thought it'd be a great thing to do. So it was a lot of fun. But give us an overview for those who don't know about the Alaska Travel Industry Association, what this annual meeting sort of is and encompasses.
Yeah, I'd love to. So ATIA, the Alaska Travel Industry Association, we are the statewide trade association to support tourism businesses in Alaska. So our goal is just to make sure that we have a healthy and robust travel industry across the entire state. And we do that through advocacy, networking, education, and through tourism marketing. So we're also the official destination marketing arm for the state of Alaska to bring visitors here and grow Alaska's tourism economy.
Oh, that's so great. And so does it rotate between, do you go like southeast, south central, and then up north? Like, do you rotate the locations?
We do, yes. And that's exactly how we do it. Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. And before, we used to be able to go to all sorts of different communities as well, like Sitka or Valdez. But the convention has just grown. We have a lot of members now, and a lot more people are participating. And so we are definitely more focused on rotating now through Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks. And Juneau is always a favorite for our members to come to.
Of course. And Liz, why is that? Why is Juneau a favorite?
Because we managed to set the bar for hospitality so high every time ATIA comes into town that we're just kind of the hard ones to get past. So I can tell you that the Juneau chapter of ATIA has been working really hard for months and months now, fundraising, putting plans together for our community night, which is for all of the attendees. It's a way for us to show off the town and really provide a lot of hospitality.
I love that there's a little bit of competition between the three cities to be like, where, who's bringing the best hospitality? Because that's part of travel, right? Is welcoming people to the community and doing that sort of thing. I'm curious, what kinds of things, I know we've had some stuff here recently in our town, but in terms of overall for the state, what kinds of things are top of mind for folks in the travel industry these days?
Yeah, a lot of the things that we are featuring throughout the convention schedule, it's really an opportunity for our members to get together and talk about all of the challenges and opportunities that we have faced in the past year and that are coming up. So definitely top of mind are cultural tourism, tourism management in communities, international visitation. Has that come back yet? We're not reaching the levels that we once were at before the pandemic, and so we're watching that very carefully. AI continues to be an important topic for all businesses, regardless. And then definitely marketing is such an important aspect of getting our visitors here and bringing them to communities and individual businesses.
Is there anything, I was looking at it, there was a story I was reading and it was in another community. It wasn't even in Alaska, but it was basically a protest in another country about over-tourism. Is that a topic that you all sort of cover at all?
Yeah, we definitely look at it from the perspective of what is going to be the best way for communities to manage tourism. We think it should be done on the local level. But of course, in Alaska, all of our visitors travel to many different communities. So whatever happens in one community can have ripple effects across the state. So that's why we like to come together and have conversations together and come up with solutions as a very innovative industry full of entrepreneurs. I think we have great discussions around these topics.
That's great. And Liz, I want to give you a shout out. I think the traveljuno.com website is a wonderful place for not only people who may be coming to Alaska, but even for those who live in the community to find out about what's going on, because you have so many things that you sort of list on there. It's one place that people put their events that are happening in town. And we talk about a lot of events here on Juno Afternoon, but it's really wonderful to have a website like that, in addition to some place like the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, which also keeps a community calendar as well. But so props for that. And I'm just curious about, like, what do you expect or what can we expect at this conference next week, Liz? What are we going to be getting from our Juno hospitality?
Well, we're working hard to, you know, set up a couple of receptions and networking events for the attendees. And we're front and center working hand in hand with Jillian and her team up in Anchorage to make sure that we're carrying through the theme, which is Immersive Alaska, that carries through all aspects of the conference, both at the breakout level, plenary level, but also on the hospitality level. So locally, we're working with the whole ATIA team to ensure that the networking events, that receptions, dinners, those kinds of things go off without a hitch, and that Jillian's team has smooth sailing when she's here in Juneau.
I love that. And you brought up my next question, so thank you. But Jillian, will you tell us about the theme, which is Immersive Alaska? How do you come up with that theme, and what does that mean?
That is a great question. And I also want to give a shout out to Liz and her team and to the whole ATIA Juno chapter. We definitely couldn't pull this convention off without all of their work and their support. And quite honestly, the convention themes are actually not chosen by ATIA itself. We go to our communities and ask them to come up with the theme, and they bring it to us. So I'm actually going to defer to Liz to explain the theme. They even designed the logo for our convention this year.
Yeah, well, thanks, Jillian. The whole crew, put their heads together. And one of the things that we hear over and over again from our visitors is that they're looking for immersive experiences. So what we wanted to do was kind of embrace that idea and try to figure out a way that we could get all of our attendees to understand different ways that they and their clients, our visitors, can immerse themselves in all things Alaska, and especially here, all things Juneau and Southeast Alaska. So I think that was kind of the impetus of it. One of the remarkable things that happened as a result of that is that on the logo, you'll see there's an extra tuff as part of that. And Jillian, may I, share that we actually had ExtraTuf reach out, and I'll let her tell the story.
Yeah, so we shared the logo with Extra Tough and we said, hey, check it out. We're, you know, you're such a part of our culture and you're going to be part of our convention theme this year. So they are sponsoring our final banquet, which is usually formal attire and awards ceremony. And they have donated 30 pairs of Extra Tough boots. And so we are encouraging all of our members to wear their formal attire with their Extra Tough boots.
It's what we like to call the Southeast dress up, right? That's how we dress up in Southeast. It's a tie and some Extra Toughs.
Yes, we are immersing ourselves in Juno culture.
I love that. I love that so much. Jillian Simpson, Liz Perry, thank you so much. If you want to learn more about the Travel Industry Association, you can go to alaskatia.org. If you're new to that travel industry, if you're new to Juno, that's a great place. And if you're also new to Juno, traveljuno.com is a wonderful website to get familiar with what happens here in this town. Or if you've got visitors coming into town, you're like, what do I do with the people who are coming to visit me? Immerse yourself in Alaska. So do that. I really appreciate you being here today. Going to the Chiefs with the conference next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Up next, we talk with the Technical Education Center at UAS, which is here downtown. And now the students at the high school can walk over the Sky Bridge to take classes. And we'll also talk about the Evening at Egan lecture tomorrow with Ernestine Hayes. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I'm joined now by Ashley Morehouse with some School of Career Education updates. Ashley is the academic advisor at the Technical Education Center right here in downtown. Gunath Chisha Igudi, thank you so much for joining me today, Ashley. It's great to have you here. Wasi'iti, how's it going?
It's going good. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So this is really kind of cool. First, let's talk about the Evening at Egan lecture that's happening tomorrow. We just want to remind folks that it's happening tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So it's happening tomorrow, obviously. It's at the Egan Library. Parking is free on campus. It starts at 7 p.m. It's free, open to the public, like, please come and join us. If you happen to not be in Juno, it is also streamed on the UAS YouTube channel. So you can do a quick Google, look for it there. The guest is Ernestine Hayes, and she is Professor Emeritus at UAS. And she is an author, and she's going to be talking about her new book. So definitely go check it out either in person or online.
That's so wonderful. Yeah. Ernestine is a wonderful, we love Ernestine at KTOO. She's been a wonderful guest in the past, and her biographies, her memoirs, Blonde Indian and The Tao of Raven, are both available out there for people to read. They're really wonderful. And this sounds like it's going to be cool, because I heard through the grapevine that she was writing some new stuff. So I'm glad that she's going to be talking about it. It looks like she was working with an Indigenous knowledge project and sort of getting some of the three ancient raven stories on fire, water, and daylight. So she'll be sharing some things about that tomorrow night at the Evening at Egan lecture, which again, as Ashley said, is 7 p.m. tomorrow. It's free. It's open to the public. And I didn't know, I knew they were archived on the YouTube channel, but I didn't know it was also live stream on the YouTube channel. So if you can't make it out to UAS all the way out there in the valley, it's so far away, then you can watch it on YouTube. Or if you just have plans, you can catch it on Saturday at some point. But Ernestine, whenever she speaks, I am inspired, and I really look forward to watching that talk that she's giving tomorrow night. Okay, so Ashley, tell us a little bit about you and your position, that you work in this technical education center. We always pass that area right over that sky bridge that goes over to the high school. We see that it says UAS, and we're like, well, UAS is out the road. What is this thing here? Tell us a little bit about that campus.
Yeah, I think that most people that I speak to in Juneau, especially people that have, you know, been here a long time, they remember this as the Marine building. That is what I'm often told. This used to be a big place for like boat building and just like able-bodied seamen classes, like things like that. We are still doing like a handful of those things, but we've really diversified what we're offering here. So we currently house the Power Technology Program, which is all-encompassing of essentially like different types of diesel engines. So whether that is, you know, like a large truck diesel engine, maybe it's the diesel engine on a boat, and it could also be the diesel engine of a generator. So we offer that program, power technology. We also have the construction technology program here at UAS, is located here in Juneau. And then we also have our welding lab. So those are the programs that we're offering here at the Technical Education Center. We are really excited. We're looking to bring in even more new programs in the coming months and semesters. So we're really excited about that. But yeah, that's what's here right now. I mean, just a little bit about me. I'm actually new to Juneau-ish, been here about 2 years. And I found out about this job, the academic advising job here, because I actually started taking classes here. So I started taking classes as a community member, and happened to have a background in higher education, but was looking to take just like a little bit of a break when my partner and I moved to Juneau. And so I got involved in taking classes instead and fell in love with the Technical Education Center. And I was basically like, I got to work here. So now I do.
where did you arrive from? Where did you come from?
We came from Pullman, Washington.
Oh, Pullman, Washington. Okay. So still Northwest, but, and what brought you up to Juneau in the first place?
My husband's job.
Ah, I see. So coming here for a position, and then you found, you were taking some classes, and then look at you, you fell into the job. So you have some experience in that role before down in Pullman or in other areas?
In a couple of different areas. I've worked at the University of Hawaii at Manoa, I've worked at the University of Idaho, and I've also worked at Washington State University in a myriad of positions, but all like student-facing, student development. So, yes.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about this new program that you have going with the Juneau Douglas High School Yada'a Kahale, which is really cool. So tell me, what is this thing and how did it begin?
We're really excited about this. So for the first time in many, many years, we have students, juniors and seniors, using the bridge on almost a daily basis, which is so fantastic. We are offering a college course, Diesel 101, during the JDHS 0 hour. So students who had wanted to take a 0 hour, we essentially like created a course that fit within that. It's a new course that a faculty member developed specifically to fit within that 0 hour confines. And also to Trevor Fritz, who is our wonderful faculty. People probably know him in the community from Fritz Marine. He is the one that is teaching that course. And so far students have really been loving it. It is really meant to be the basics of diesel, right? So how do you use a micrometer to measure components of an engine? How do you crimp wires, right? So it's those basic techniques that are really going to benefit a student long-term, whether they're just wanting to be able to work on their own vehicle, maybe they are wanting to take this as a full-on career path, work at a shop here in town, what have you. This is like that true basics class. So we're offering that all semester long. It's Monday through Thursday, again, during that 0 hour time frame. And we have 18 students that are coming across the bridge every day to participate in that course, Trevor. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. Is this like a trial? Like, is it possible that you might begin to offer other courses? I guess because it's got to fit within, I don't really understand. I get the idea of what a 0 hour is, but I'm assuming that there might be restrictions in terms of the time, because if you're trying to fit it within the student's day, I remember when I was in high school, I took what was called, early dismissal or late arrival, right? We had those options where when you were getting to be a junior or a senior, I think it was in your senior year, you were able to, and I liked to sleep in. So I took late arrival and I was always in something after school, whether it was a sport or theater or something. So I just liked to sleep in. I didn't have to get to school till like 10:30, 11 o'clock, which was awesome. But if I had this option to maybe take like a really cool technical class, that's kind of neat. So is this something that you're thinking about maybe expanding in the future? Because it seems like 18 students, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is. So we are looking to offer this Diesel 101 course at least every single year. It might not be every single semester, but definitely every single school year. And then what we are currently working on right now is other offerings to offer the other semester, right? So that students who are potentially participating in the Diesel 101 course now have other offerings that they can participate in next semester, along with other students who might be interested as well. So in the spring, we are going to be offering the Introduction to Mining Occupations and Operations. I always forget if it's operations and occupations or occupations, operations, but yes. But we're going to be offering that course. And it takes a deep dive into, oh my gosh, the plethora of different types of jobs and positions that are available to people that are wanting to work at the mines here in Juneau. And we partner with the mines to offer that course. So goodness, last spring we had people from both Kensington and Hecla come and talk about their specialty, whether that was like water treatment, mine safety, just the whole gamut of jobs that are available there. So
it's cool. And I think that it is, maybe just say Introduction to Mining O&O, right? And then you don't have to remember which way it goes.
Yeah. Normally we call it IMU. So oh. If you hear that around town, IMU, that's what that stands for.
All right. And is there other community opportunities at the Technical Education Center? Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I was taking classes, right? So anyone who is a community member here in Juneau is welcome to take one of our classes as what we call a non-degree seeking student. So if you're an individual, maybe you're thinking like, I would like to be able to build myself a shed in my backyard. You can come and take our framing class and build those skills to be able to build your own shed. Any course that we offer here at the Technical Education Center, any community member is welcome to come and take. And one of the other things that I wanted to mention, which is so fantastic, is specifically for women. If you are interested in coming and taking some trades classes, so you're interested in welding or maybe a diesel engines class, or like I said, framing, we have a program called the Women in Trades Scholarship. And if you qualify for that and apply for that, we can fund up to $2,300 of tuition money for female students across Juneau.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so do people find, normally you go to like uas.edu, but where do we find information specifically on the courses for the Technical Education Center?
So if you are wondering where or what classes we're offering this spring, you can just look up the UAS class schedule. It's really easy to find if you go to the UAS, right, .edu website, .alaska.edu, sorry. and just search class schedule. It will come up. It's the very first link. And then you can search by content area. So it has this huge drop down and you can just find welding and it'll bring up every single welding class that's being offered here in Juneau. Same for construction. You'll just use the drop down, look for construction. It'll bring up every single construction class that's being offered here in Juneau. One of the other really great things about our technical classes is that not all of them are the full semester. So if you have a really busy schedule, maybe you have kids, what have you, we have what we call short courses that last anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. And so you can definitely come learn a skill again, right? Build on some of those like self pieces, and don't have to necessarily be in a classroom for 16 weeks.
I love that. That's so great. There's so much going on always at UAS. So just to recap, we've got the evening at Egan Lecture with Ernestine Hayes tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at the Egan Library. Your kids have an option at the JDHS Yadav Kathleh High School now to walk over the Sky Bridge and at least start taking Diesel 101 and maybe even get some introduction to mining opportunities and the different offerings that might be in that world, which is kind of cool. And it sounds like that program is going to be great. Or if you want to take yourself a class to get some technical experience in education, it's a great place to go. And you can find all that information at uas.edu. Ashley Morehouse, thank you so much. Gwyneth Cheese for joining me today and running all that down. That's a lot of information, a lot to digest. And and even though it's been 2 years, welcome to Juneau.
Thank you. Thank you. I do have just one last thing that I want to plug. UAS, we're starting a non-credit program for Yamaha outboard motors. Huge thing. It's going to be this spring. We don't even have it on our website yet because we're still building the website for that. But we've had so much interest already. I don't know if we even need to put it on the website. But yes, just wanted to put that out into the community that we are starting that program. We're going to be offering two of the Yamaha certificates starting this spring. That is also in partnership with the school district. Jake Jacoby is going to be bringing students over to have them participate in those as well. So yeah.
Hot tip. Thank you, Ashley. Really appreciate it. Have a great day. Gwyneth Cheese. That will do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we talk about a special 5-course tasting menu in honor of Filipino American History Month, plus a special cookie jar sale fundraiser, and Halloween is just around the corner. We'll learn about a special scavenger hunt that you can take part of. Juneau Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO, Juneau 104.3, and KAUK, Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Craig George. Gwyneth Cheese, have a great evening.